Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of UFO Encounters Worldwide, episode 108. This is your host, Jesse P., MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. Today, we have a very good episode for you. We're going to welcome on special guest, Sylvain Rochon, who is a serial entrepreneur, a futurist, and an author for over the past 20 years. He's been involved in the subject. And he is behind a really, really good organization called the Alliance for Extraterrestrial Diplomatic Contact, which started years ago back in 1975 and recently was reborn in 2020. We have a lot of great information to go over. They're doing really good things and they have a lot of good backing scientists that are on board, multiple different organizations. So I think this will be a very insightful episode for today. Also, remember, today's episode is sponsored by the podcast Let's Find Out with co-host Diego. He's bringing some of the best guests in the field of ufology, the paranormal, and cryptozoology. You can get the link to his show in the description of the episode below or over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. We also have some great new articles that we've written over there. There's some good events coming up. You can get all that over at our website. So we have tons of information to go over today, and I'm sure you're going to be interested in this. I know I am. So strap on them seatbelts. We're going for a ride. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 108 of UFO Encounters Worldwide. This is your host, Jesse Peek, MUFON field investigator in the state of Pennsylvania, city of Philadelphia. And today's episode is sponsored by the podcast Let's Find Out with co-host Diego. You can find that in the episode on the description below or over at our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Today, I'm sitting down with serial entrepreneur, futurist, and author, Sylvain Rochon. Sylvain, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Jesse.
Absolutely. I was looking over the website and the things you guys are doing. It's very interesting, very well done, and I think it's an important topic, and definitely an important thing moving forward as we move with the ET topic in general. So I guess let's start from the beginning of how you got involved into this field. You've been doing this for over 20 years, but where did it start for you? Was this a sighting or was this just an interest in the subject overall?
I guess I'm a bit of an oddity in some way. I started off like just being a scientist at heart, right? Since a childhood, just being curious about the world. And I got interested in the paranormal because of that, because, you know, the unexplained just annoyed me. You know, there's science, people talking about it, and then you have books that because, you know, we used to read books back in the day, you know, about the topics, the subjects that you had, you know, ghosts, ESP, you know, ETs, and I was just intrigued by it all at first. But I started to think that as I read, and this is high school, right, as I read about it, I said, well, I mean, if it's so prevalent, of course, some of it is cultural, like folklore, that kind of thing. But I mean, what if there's some kernel of truth to it? Right? I was just asking questions. And so for a lot of it, it's like there's just nothing to be done about it. You know, for instance, like ghosts and things like that. There's just not a lot of hard evidence. It's just a lot of stories and experiences. But with the ET phenomena, there was actually some hard evidence. There's some radar contacts by the military. There was a bunch of stuff. So I started thinking that, well, maybe we're onto something. There's something going on there. And back at the time, like I'm 48 years old. So that was in the 80s. Right. It was a thing, definitely a discussion, but it wasn't certainly nowhere near mainstream. It was just a weird subject to talk about, the paranormal. It was part of the paranormal. I don't think it is anymore. I think paranormal still exists, but I think the ET discussion, because of disclosure nowadays, it's an open topic. It's a topic of discussion. It warrants questions and discussion at a highest level.
Absolutely.
And at the time, like I had a very interesting encounter with a book, and this is a book that my father brought home. That was the story of a man called Raël or Claude Vaurien at the time that had an encounter, right, with an ET, called himself Yahweh and was an Elohim. And these are biblical names to me. So I was intrigued. My father didn't talk about it much at first because it was a bit of a not topic, but I decided to read the books because I wanted to know what it was not all about. Maybe there was some kind of connection, some kind of way to kind of put the dots together. And that book actually did it for me. It's like it defined, was you know, this person, this Frenchman, met with an alien, called himself Yahweh, for 7 days, and basically recited to this man, who was a journalist in France at the time, the story of creation of life through science and visitations and the prophets. Who were they? They were contactees as well. And then started talking about there was the descriptions of some of the monuments that were built, that we, the pyramids, for example, and other references like that, that, to this day, we wonder how they were built. Well, probably advanced civilizations, and also related to God and gods. And I forget who said this, but any technology advanced enough is going to be perceived as magic or, powers of a god.
Correct.
So to me, that whole idea kind of brought it all together. It's like, wait a minute. Maybe we've been visited by these aliens for a long time, and a lot of our myths and legends and stories actually come from encounters. That all that magic from our history, pixies, elves, a lot of that stuff could come from those encounters with people that were highly advanced, that came here, created, manipulated DNA, and did a bunch of stuff. So that's how it all really kind of came together as a field of thought for me. And then years later, I got involved in not-for-profits, I got involved in some of these ideologies and groups that that spoke about the aliens as a skeptic, as somebody seeking data, right? So I met a bunch of people that were contactees. I've never had any sighting whatsoever. I've never been involved in anything that I could perceive as an encounter of any kind, but I became quite convinced that a lot of these stories that are being told to this day by individuals are actually true. They're not. Some of them are probably fantasy or imagined. But a lot of it is probably true. So that we are being observed, that we are being curated or helped in some way to become a wiser civilization for a greater goal, perhaps joining this group of civilizations that are more advanced than us in the galaxy and in the universe as equals, and becoming this enlightened civilization. And that idea just appeals to me, the fact that we reach some kind of golden era where we can learn from civilization that we're able to go beyond the basic instincts and aggressivity and become a better people for it. And so that's in part why recently, because of this, ETs and the visitations have become more mainstream because of disclosure. That's why me and some other people, we created the Alliance for Extraterrestrial Diplomatic Contacts. Like, we need to build an embassy. We need to formalize it. We need to have high-level discussions about it. We need to agree on the rules and laws that manage an official open visit from a civilization from outer space,
right?
And all that stuff. And here we are today.
So I went over the website. It's very well done, and you guys are looking at the framework, preferably built upon the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations from 1961. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that and how it can work into the ET diplomatic thing that you're running?
Yeah, the Vienna Convention is really important from a legal perspective, because as some experts cited, I think it was early this year, if we have a contact, an official, open, obvious contact, right, with a civilization from elsewhere that's more advanced, the biggest danger is going to be us shooting each other, basically. Right. Just because there's no rule or law that we agreed upon on what would happen in that case, right? And I'm reminded of some science fiction movies, one of which, the name just doesn't come to me, but it's a remake from an old classic. I can't remember it now. But the story is aliens are here, and we're kind of curating the planet, like the life on planet Earth, and they send a last person to check to see if we're worthy of becoming part of a bigger civilization or be destroyed to save the rest of life. And as part of that movie, well, there is there's a messenger that lands in Central Park.
Yes, the Earth stood still.
Yeah, that's right. When the Earth was stood still, a classic. So in the modern version is Keanu Reeves that plays the ET. And what we really don't see too much in that movie, but it's there, is that, well, the U.S. kind of like keep it secret, right?
Yep.
And then when other nations discover that there's been exchanges and there's been stuff going on, that there's disputes and there's threats going, and that's where the alien decides, well, like, we're just not ready for this. Like, we're destroying everything and we're just about to destroy each other now. So this is what some experts are fearing. Now, the Vienna Convention, where that comes in, is that is a document where all the nations of the United Nations have signed up on, and it defines diplomatic missions and embassies. Like, what are the rules? Diplomatic immunity and whatnot. And what's fun about this document that was drafted, mind you, in 1961, there was some optional protocols added, was ratified a number of times. But it doesn't define whether or not a diplomat needs to be human. So as long as you have an individual, let's say, or a creature, or a person of some form, declares themselves as representative of a nation, official representatives of diplomats, then the Vienna Convention kinks in, and everybody's bound to it. All the 200 nations, I don't know how many signatories there are. Some nations are not signed onto it, like there's a very few, but most nations are. So presumably, let's assume ET arrives and we declare them, or they declare themselves as diplomats, representatives of their civilization. All of a sudden, the rules of the Vienna Convention apply to everybody. That means those diplomats have diplomatic immunity. They cannot be trialed, they cannot be attacked, and so on, by anybody in the international community. And the international community will protect those diplomats as per the rules that were defined in the Vienna Convention, right? Because if that wouldn't be the case, the issue would be, like, ET comes in, right? Say, hey, hello. They don't have any rights. There's no law that covers ETs on Earth. And each nation has different sets of laws to deal with intruders in their space in different ways. It becomes a really bad situation for everybody, because then they're like, what happens? It depends on the commanders, the military. Like, they make a judgment call based on what they feel would be best. It could be extremely dangerous, right? So that's why the Vienna Convention is really important. It's that foundational document where it automatically applies in that case, and it protects that piece. We don't need to have every nation on Earth to pass new laws that include aliens and give them rights. And that would be a monstrous effort, and it wouldn't happen within a reasonable timeline anyway.
So the Alliance for Extraterrestrial Diplomatic Contact also would provide authoritative advice and info to governments. What kind of information and advice would you guys give to these different governments to make this work when they do come?
Well, we've prepared an optional protocol for the Vienna Convention, because there is some points, since it was written without thinking about ETs. There are some points that where there is need for adjustment. These points are not critical, but they could become important. So we created the draft, and this is kind of like an amendment to the, as I know you're American, to the Constitution.
Okay. Right?
So we're not ratifying the document, we're adding something to it, essentially, right? So we're suggesting language that allows these additions to it, and United Nations is the body in which those deliberations are made, and it's pretty simple. One member nation can decide to bring any kind of optional protocol over for discussion. So it doesn't need to be a consensus to bring something in. You just bring something. You make a proposal, just like a law in most parliaments, or congresses. You bring something, and it may be discussed and voted on. So that's kind of the process.
Okay.
Same to make a convention to discuss the very possibility of an embassy. The embassies themselves, because the Vienna Convention covers that. Can be created by the authority of a single nation. So you can have Sierra Leone in Africa can decide, I'm building an embassy for ETs. And this is going to be an official embassy, and it's declared officially through official channels. The rest of the planet has to accept that embassy's declaration by the law for the Vienna Convention. And So what we're working on is what we've been doing since 2019. Specifically, we've sent proposals which are a little bit different than what you'd expect, but I can get back to that. Proposals to all the nations of the Earth, saying, "Hey, this is an excellent project. Here are the benefits for the nation, which are mostly economical, tourism, that kind of thing. But also, hey, it's easy. All you have to do is give extraterritoriality and it becomes an official embassy for ETs. And that's what's going to draw a lot of attention because it would be official." And since then, we've had a handful of nations that have been in regular discussion with us to talk about the optional protocol, including that into the discussion with the United Nations, and also talk about giving the appropriate size piece of land for making it extraterritorial for the construction of an official embassy for that specific purpose. And there's been significant interest, as you probably know. There's been more and more talk openly about ETs, so government officials are becoming more and more comfortable talking about the subject, and so the conversations have been more and more productive over the last year or so.
And do you see any Pacific countries that have more interest than others? Because I know, for example, Australia isn't really open. They still kind of have the stigma of the subject still. But are there any that are really interested and some that have kind of taken a little more of a back seat in this?
There's a mix. I don't know the names of the nations that have been contacting us. That's our president, Daniel Turcotte. He's taking care of all those conversations.
Okay.
What do they call it? Military compartmentalization.
Okay.
So my responsibility is more distribution of information and networking. His responsibility is diplomatic pieces and conversations. So there's just a very small amount of people that are aware of these conversations occur.
Okay.
But what he has hinted at things, because I know he can't give me the countries, the names of the countries. Most of the nations that contacted us, where we've had reasonable discussions to deep discussions with, are not first world nation countries. So it's not Canada, U.S., or Western Europe.
Right.
They are countries that are that have a lot more advantages in taking on this project. Like imagine, and again, I don't know, right? So I'm just speculating and picking countries at random. Imagine the country of Belize, which is in Central America. Right? A small nation, I think population is 500,000 people. It's small, right? But their income is mostly tourism from cruise lines. Well, if they build an embassy, because they can, they're allowed, right? They build an embassy extraterritorial, most likely they're going to get a lot more tourism. So it's a boost in the economy. And what do they lose? Not a whole lot.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's a tourism industry. If you try to do the same in the U.S., oh my gosh, it's complicated.
Yeah.
because not everybody's going to agree. There's going to be fighting. Or this is ridiculous. And it's going to become political and all sides. And it becomes a big mess. And they don't need the extra tourism. The economy is great. It's diversified, right? So there's not a lot of motivation to take something like that on unless something dramatic happens, the right people are in place, that kind of thing. So presumably, since I don't know, nations that are high in tourism, that want to expand their economic growth, maybe diversify, that are reasonably small, are probably more likely to want to do something like this. It just makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's incredible that you guys have had good feedback so far doing this. I think it's an incredible task, and I think it's something that definitely needs to be done, especially with disclosure happening now and more people being open and the stigma not being as strong as it used to be. Us being a war-torn, nation or countries, and, with all the wars going on now, do you think that ETs would come at this point in time, or do you think that they're kind of sitting back waiting and watching to see what happens here?
I think they're watching. If you look at statistics over across the board, like lots of different statistics over, like think about well-being, healthcare, wealth, contentment, measure by whatever measuring stick you want to measure things at. Our humanity is actually improving year over year, even though it seems like things are getting worse. If you look at the data, it's actually getting better every year. We're doing fine. There's fewer wars than there ever have been, on average. If you take like a 5-year average, for example, right? So that's good. Right, that means we're making gradual progress.
Absolutely.
So that's very positive. However, we're still idiots.
Yeah, anyway, very.
Right. So, at least in my view, like some of the conflicts we're seeing in the world now are, to me, they're a dinosaur type of wars from another era. Like they don't make any modern sense anymore. It seems like we should be wiser and be able to resolve things in a very different way.
Correct.
But humans are complex. It's not so simple. There's a lot of emotion involved. There's some power grabs. There's sometimes it's money and power. Ideals that, to me, existed in 20th century but shouldn't exist in the 21st. But they're still there, obviously, because the wars are there, right? But just the fact that we're talking about this using this language gives me a lot of hope, because these dinosaur wars are perpetuated by dinosaur people,
right?
People of another generation to a certain degree. They're still young adopters, of course, doing terrorism, attacking individuals, and things like that. But it's an older ideology that we're growing out of, I think. And the statistics and wellness and the way we're thinking actually demonstrate that. There's a lot more movements nowadays about the unification of humanity. Not under one nation or anything like that, but just thinking of each other as brothers and sisters across the board. There's a lot more of that than in a period where we call the hippie period, like in the 70s, where there was peace and love. Well, there's a lot more peace and love now than there were in the 70s. We just don't think they look ridiculous. These are normal people now,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Don't do anything weird. It just makes sense to people because we have more abundance, I guess, because we have a lot more understanding about each other thanks to the internet and being communicating overseas and all over the place with everybody.
Yeah, social media.
We know each other. So we feel like, well, people overseas, over this other country, they're the same as us. So it's a lot harder to want harm somebody that you understand.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So we're going in the right direction. I'm just like ETs are watching. I don't know when they've had the experience. Most likely they've had their own experiences with their own culture at some point.
Right. Right.
Going through this. They're waiting for a certain tipping point that they know and we don't.
I agree 100%.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and take our quick break, and when we get back, we can kind of get into how people and we can actually support the agenda that you guys have and get involved, because
sure,
that's also another interesting aspect of your project. So we'll go ahead and take our break, and we'll go through these quick messages, and we'll be right back. This is your host, Jesse Peek. Check out our official website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com. Read up on UFO articles, including abductions, close encounters, sighting cases, megalithic structures, and more. Also, check out our new Facebook group. You'll get updates on guests every week, new events coming up, and our schedule of who we're going to have on in the future. Again, that's UFO Encounters Worldwide Facebook group, and our website at ufoencountersworldwide.wordpress.com.
Have you always been curious about the unknown, the unexplainable? Do you find yourself intrigued by the mysterious and paranormal side of our world? Then let's find out, with co-host Diego, is the podcast for you. Join in on an adventure into the world of the inexplicable and get insights from experienced researchers, investigators, and experts. Listen to mind-bending discussions and fascinating stories as Let's Find Out explores the strange, mysterious, and paranormal. Let's Find Out with co-host Diego is a unique and engaging podcast that uncovers the mysteries of the cryptic and unknown. With insightful interviews and discussions, they discover the very latest theories, discoveries, and investigations that may someday give us the final answer as to what may be behind the veil of reality. Available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Radio Public, TuneIn, and Rumble.
UFO Encounters Worldwide wants to hear from you. Have an experience or a sighting you want to share? Contact your host, Jesse Peek, at ufoencountersworldwide@gmail.com today.
UFO Encounters Worldwide would like to announce our brand new home at the UNX Network. Listen to us every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear UFO Encounters Worldwide podcast. That's on the UNX Network. Looking to get some UFO merchandise? We'll get some UFO Encounters Worldwide official stickers, and we also have pins. Check out our selection, DM us or email us if you're interested for inquiry, and we'll show you our selection. All pins and stickers are $3 each and $1 shipping, or you can mix and match any five for $10 and free shipping. DM us or send us an email if you're interested. All right, welcome back to the second half of UFO Encounters Worldwide, episode 108. So with the organization, there's ways that people can support the network. It allows people to get involved with the project. Could you talk a little bit about that and how people can actually move forward in doing that?
Absolutely. The Alliance is a volunteer-based organization. So nobody's being paid, at least currently, and everybody's a volunteer. We have approximately 40 volunteers from all over, from Japan, as far east as Japan, and Australia, and as far west as California. And all continents in between, like Africa, Europe, and so on. So that's one way. Like those that really have extra time, they want to volunteer and help. And what people typically do as volunteers is we do some productions for one, so they can get involved in that. We also do a lot of research and outreach. We're looking for support from different organizations and influencers a lot. So there's a lot of like contacting individuals. And that gives us strength, because if we can show that the project is supported by more individuals and more organizations, then politicians and diplomats pay more attention when we have a conversation with them. Right. So that's part of the strategy. And also it gives us a bit of a confidence boost, knowing that there's like currently there's nearly 2 million people that are supporting the Alliance.
Excellent.
And a little over 25 organizations, and we want to increase that. We want to hit the 2 million mark by the end of the year, and so on. So that's volunteering and being part of the structure of the organization to achieve certain goals, right? But not everybody wants to do that. So we set up on our website, you know, alliance4et.org. So 4 being the number 4. We set up a membership page, and on that page we talk about the volunteering. We also invite people to donate, because you know money is energy for a not-for-profit. Nobody's there's no cash flow. We're not selling things, so
100%.
So
yep.
It's completely volunteer, and so just straight up donations. And also we have a membership system, so if people want to donate a certain amount per month or like a lump sum per year to keep our operations going, you can do that, and you get privileged access to information in the press releases and conversations and cool swag by becoming a member. So those are different ways. You know, it's either time or money, because you know we're doing activities and getting things going. We currently have $50 million US accumulated for the construction of the embassy, because it's always good when you talk to an organization or a country about a project, telling them that we have the money, we're not asking for it for any.
That's great, right? News.
So that helps a lot. Like they say, hey, like, okay, how much do you want to build? It's like, no, we don't need anything. We already have the contractors, the developers lined up. They're going to be selling condos ahead of time. We're going to raise more money, and we can build the damn thing. All we need is the land donated according to the Vienna Convention to build a proper embassy. That we can't do. That's something the nation can do, and that's only paperwork and red tape. We're not asking them for money. Right. So that's really that's hard power. So some of the donation beyond the operational cost, which is minimal for the Alliance, we're all remote. We don't have an office. Right. Well, the balance of that would go to towards that fund to actually, you know, build the MC proper and the infrastructure around it. So those are the different means by which people can get involved.
So I also seen that you have a team of scientists that are on board. Very impressive. Mm-hmm. Many backgrounds that range far and wide. Could you talk about what some of the positions are and what they're doing to help move the project forward?
The list of scientists, these are supporters, right? So they are not necessarily, some of them are directly engaged as volunteers.
Okay.
So they're active in doing some of the activities. But it's not like the Alliance is doing any science or engineering proper, right? So they are participating in the day-to-day, like I described, like networking, production, and doing these are the things that the Alliance do. But what they're doing that is even more important than that is that they give credibility to the project, because they are highly educated. Their voice carries weight of credence in the world. So
absolutely,
they are good promoters for us. In that sense, so we want to be treated seriously by everybody. It's a valid project. We've raised the funds. We have the plan. We've distributed it. It's been taken seriously by nations. So that adds to that. So we have, I don't know the exact number, but somewhere between 200 and 250 scientists and engineers and other masters and doctorates and all that jazz on that list supporting us. So that's the importance of that, and that's the strategy.
Yeah, that's great. It's and I completely agree. It's great to have that behind you as an organization. Definitely gives you credibility, especially. I mean, I looked at the list, and I mean, it's phenomenal. So I've read there was an article on your website from March 6th of 2021, and it actually stated a United Nations member urged support for the Embassy for ET project as well. How big is that for you to be at that high level and have members of the United Nations pushing this agenda forward?
That's really important. It's not, interestingly, it's not critical, which is it. Like I said, it's interesting because you're a single nation and their representative can actually do this on their own. However, the United Nations is the deliberative body that manages this kind of discussion, like diplomacy and changes to how we operate. So having the open discussion at the United Nations proper can be important. To a lot of people, because it brings the topic and the discussion into a more serious mode, because it's the whole planet now, and that is talking about it. So, for example, using the example of Belize earlier, right? Okay, we built the embassy on their land. They're the ones that gave the extraterritoriality. They made the motion for the optional protocol. Either been discussed or not, the embassy is built, right? Our job is done, basically, from a fundamental point of view. But if the other nations don't chime in and say, hey, we recognize this embassy officially, there's no real discussion, then it's a project of one nation, even though it is a functional embassy by the rules of the Vienna Convention. But on the other hand, if it's all brought into the United Nations, it's discussed. Everybody clearly agrees that yes, this is we recognize the embassy as such, and so on. Well, then it makes the news for everybody, everywhere in the world. Now the word spreads a whole lot more. So even though it's not critical, it becomes an important thing at the same time, right? Because then the one of the most important things in the whole effort, beyond the construction of that official place that we can all agree legally that this is where diplomacy within ET is going to happen, is changing the hearts and minds of the people of humanity. Be able to get them to appreciate and understand that this is happening, that a place is being prepared officially with agreement of all the nations. A lot of people follow politicians and leaders in what they're doing, and they believe only what they can see. So if they don't receive any news, or it's something just in another nation, it's another nation's project, they kind of ignore it. It's not important. But if it's their own country that talks about it, that says it's important, then they say, okay, now it's important to me. So preparing humanity as a whole, as a population, for that eventuality can help prevent some issues when there is an official visitation and announcement, because people are, at least in their minds, ready for that eventuality, because you know we made it ready. So that's part of the mission of the Alliance, is to support this mindset change inside humanity, that we are not alone, that we've been visited for many, many years. ET are not aggressive towards us. They're observers. They've been nudging us, possibly, probably, and many like me believe that they've been involved intrinsically in us being in existence, in life actually being on Earth. Pleasing the advocates of intelligent design theory, I guess, by saying that. but yeah, so. So we're getting humanity in some ways into a higher consciousness, if you would, thinking that, you know, our little troubles here between, you know, religious belief, skin color, they pale in comparison to all the differences that we're going to encounter when meeting ETs, right? And their whole civilization. with their advanced technology. And even though they have way more advanced technologies than we do, they haven't invaded us. They haven't done anything significant to us to alter our path in a negative way. And we just have all to learn from those people from outer space.
So do you think the ETs, you know, we know that many people believe that there is life outside the planet now. And I believe the recent poll was like over 70% people believe that it's here. Do you think that there has been some sort of contact between any type of country and ET race at this point in time, or they at least have tried or anything of that nature?
I've heard a lot of stories. I've read some. I've spoken with people that have that opinion that they've been regular contacts, you know, Area 51 and other stories. I don't think so. I think there's been a lot of direct contacts with individuals and small groups, but government discussions in isolation with ETs. I don't have any proof either way. By the way, like I can't really.
Right. No. Yeah.
I don't think so. That doesn't make any sense to me. Like from the ET's perspective, right? Why would they do that? Our governments are, especially whether they're elected or dictatorial, I think they're ill-equipped to have those conversations, and the ETs would be wise enough to understand that.
Yeah.
I just think, like, why would they, you know, they don't need to do any of that stuff. Like, what would they say to them, like, to leaders and militaries? Like, I just don't get it. So unless I have hard proof, like, I'm kind of dismissing that. But there's a lot of evidence of a lot of contacts with individuals. I can't say that they're all true. But I'm sure many of them are, and there's definitely proof of UFOs of alien origins doing flybys of various sorts, and impressive the hell out of a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Places. And I mean,
I think they're announcing themselves a lot more that way. It's kind of showing that they exist by doing incredible aeronautics, and doing some first contact experiences that are that impact the people that around it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you as well too. You know, with contacts with people and different experiencers, there's the CE5 protocols where there's communication mm-hmm. happening. How important is that for the communication between people and experiencers and ET races to build up for this embassy and this contact to happen, this diplomatic contact?
Well, I'm pretty sure, just like looking at technology timelines, like we are able now, like our technology, we are able to read people's minds. We use EEG and other technologies using little caps, and we're even started to be able to inject ideas into people's brains. It's a brand new technology, and it's rudimentary, but it's still there. We're able to do that today, and it's 2023. Alien beings that are able to come here from another solar system, your presumption it would be from another solar system, not from within, requires technologies that are way, way ahead of us, right? So they can probably capture people's thoughts. Like we've been taught from a long time ago that prayer was great and to talk to God. I'm using that as an example. This is a thought exercise. I think that God was an advanced civilization with technology we didn't understand. And we just called him God, and God that did magic, like being able to hear us when we were thinking and when we were talking in prayer. But prayer is basically talking with God, right? And God is receiving on a receiver somewhere in a computer. So that's what I think that is. And they probably are able to do that because we're able to do that almost right now.
Yeah.
Like we're using our own existing technology. And that being said, CE5 protocol is kind of like a prayer. you're trying to contact, you're trying to think, you're trying to use telepathy, which is waves produced by the brain. They can be captured at a distance, not only using a cap. Maybe they're capturing that. Trying to analyze that data lake, so to speak, and to see, well, how many people are having certain attitudes and mindsets? Are they ready, like on the individual level? I think they're watching over that for that. So CE5, yeah, thinking and praying for ET or God, if you're in that mood, in a non-selfish way, in a welcoming way, welcoming them and the kind of thing. I think that's great. I think that can only help them decide whether or not they should come. So I encourage people to do it. It's actually very calming. But bottom line is that if you assume everybody on Earth is doing their prayers, welcoming ETs, right, and thinking about humanity being one race and one people, well, we got peace on Earth right there. So it's part of the CFI exercise is not only communication with ETs, possibly, but also it's an indication of happiness and peace within the individual. I think that could be transformational for us, humanity.
So in a sense, they would kind of actually already know the right time to come and make this contact, in a sense, correct?
Heck, like we have AI now that can predict better than we can, yeah. All sorts of things. Like I'm sure they know exactly when it's going to happen within a certain margin of error and probability. And they're just prepping us for that. We're still kind of a loose cannon. Things can go either way.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's no certainty in probabilities. But they probably know and have a really clear idea, having gone through it and being able to model it using the data available. That just makes sense to me as a scientist, right? So the onus is really all on us. Like they decide when they're going to come, and we don't know when and what are the exact conditions. But we are the people that decide what actions we're going to take to enable that moment that falls into the probability that we will be ready and not destroy each other ourselves. I mean, and then having that moment with an ET civilization that's going to say, "Hey, we're here. We came because we feel you're ready now, and you're peaceful enough. Now let's have a conversation. Let's talk to everybody. Let's openly have a conference call with everybody on Earth simultaneously." whatever. So, I mean, these are all things that make sense to me from a techno-scientific point of view and also a psychological point of view. Now that we know a lot about data, about AI, about communications, about the brain, all these activities that are happening are, I think they're all predictable from their perspective, and we just need to take action.
Yeah, I completely agree. I believe that 100%. Knowing that, you know, ETs have been with us since basically the beginning of man being on Earth, what is your theory on the hybrid program? Are humans a seed of ETs? Did they create us? Did they create man? Are we half hybrids, half human? Just wanted to get your opinion on that.
That's very interesting, because if you look at old scriptures, I'm talking about religious scriptures, or at least they're called that.
Right.
Some people would call them also part of history. Even though they are stories, there's probably bits and pieces of truth in that, that spoken history that happened early on, before we could actually write things down. So a lot of those religious scriptures from the Old Testament to the more modern scriptures, there's bits and pieces of that talk about cherubs, Elohim, which means those who came from the sky,
right?
angels. Angel, actually, from old Hebrew, is a rough translation, means messenger, right? So it's a cherub is a small creature, for example. So these are more descriptions. Well, they existed in those stories, and they had magical powers and did some amazing things. And in some cases, there are some writings that say, well, you know, they thought, you know, the women of humanity were pretty, and we had children with them. It's in fact in the Bible,
right?
I believe, I don't know if it's Genesis or one of the earlier books in there. And there's a bunch of different texts that talk about that, where the creators were mingling with their creation and having kids.
Yeah.
When you think about Zeus, right, in the pantheon, like more than one god with very human characteristics to them, and Zeus had kept having children with,
many of them,
women at the foot of Olympus, and that had half his power, and were kind of considered demigods that had like knowledge possibly, or some kid that made a men special from the common man.
Right.
So, I mean, everybody's kind of familiar with genetics by now. If you have sex with another species and you engender a child that can reproduce, well, that person is carrying half the gene pool of an alien or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And those genes just keep to get passed along the lines. And how many are there? I don't know. But they could be quite a bit. If ET has been on planet Earth mingling with their creation for hundreds of years and having fun with them, could be a lot of us have alien genes in us. Saying that you have half alien genes, that's really unlikely unless your actual father or mother is alien, because that's how it works in genetics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And some people say that they are exactly that. They are the child of an alien.
Yes.
And a human. Why not? It is said in the scriptures that God created us in their image.
In the vision, yes. Right? Yep.
Well, so basically that could be interpreted as they are as human as we are. They made us human like they are in their image, looking like them. So maybe genetically compatible and similar in stature and look. And if you look at a lot of the ETs that are presumed to have come down and had contact, a lot of them, most of them, are very similar to humans. Skin color changes a little bit, like the height is different.
Absolutely.
The humanoid, most of them, right? So one of them could be an old ancestor.
Very true. It's very, very true.
<not?
laughs> Eric von Däniken talks about it.
I don't think it means anything. I don't know. For most people, like, I may be carrying some alien genes inside me from 1,000 years ago.
Right.
It probably won't affect my daily life, right?
Yep. Yeah,
but it is an interesting thought. Just like I probably have Mongolian genes, I probably have African genes in me. Like it's part of my makeup. It doesn't really change what I believe or what I
correct
think and what I should do.
Yep. So we got about 2 minutes left. Do you want to tell everybody where they can look to find the website, where they can follow your work and what you guys are doing, and how they can help out?
Yeah, absolutely. So the website is Alliance, the number 4, et.org. And you'll find everything there. Descriptions about the Vienna Convention, the Optional Protocol, the supporter network, the membership page, as I mentioned, where you can get involved. That's in bright yellow. So you can find that pretty easily. And there's some videos and some blogs you can read that describes who we are and what we're doing. If you use the Contact Us page, or if you join the newsletter, you'll probably be at some point in contact with me or with one of my colleague volunteers, and we'll take care of you.
Excellent, excellent. I want to really thank you for coming on today. This is a very interesting conversation. And I think it needs to be talked about more of what you guys are doing, because I think this is an important topic and an important mission organization, everything you're doing. So thank you for coming on today and sharing this with the audience and myself as well.
Well, thanks a bunch for inviting me.
Absolutely. We'll have to check in with you again in the future when you guys are doing some more work. If anything new pops up, I would love to have you back on for another conversation. So thanks again for coming on. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 108 today. We'll be back with another episode next week. And until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky. Well, I want to thank Sylvain Rochon for coming on today and sharing his information about the Alliance for Extraterrestrial Diplomatic Contact. I think it's a great organization and something to get behind, especially if you're involved in the field of ufology. I think it's very important. We all know and we believe that there's some kind of life out there, ET life especially. So we want to make sure that we get behind good organizations like this and share that information. You can get the link to the episode in the description below, and make sure you go check that out. Next week, we're going to welcome special guest Paul Esco, author. He has a very good book out right now, so that should be a very interesting episode. He's also an author over at Flying Disc Press with Philip Mantle, so that should be great. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 108, and we'll be back next week with another episode. And until next time, remember to keep your eyes in the sky.